morning.
Good morning, and thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Lisa Blatt, and I represent Reckitt Benckiser. By way of background, the company filed this case after the EPA in 2008 purported to de facto cancel the company's registrations as of June 4th, 2011, and the agency thereafter refused to follow the formal cancellation procedures of Section 6 of FIFRA. And the government's decision to ban the company's products and de facto cancel the registration is embodied in the risk mitigation decision, or RMD, and a follow-on June 18th letter to the company, which told the company it was required to cancel its registrations and required to stop selling its products.
Well, but you would agree, at least, wouldn't you, that you have until June 4th, 2011?
Absolutely. And at that date, and the
company... So they haven't canceled them yet, even under your interpretation, have they?
Right. I mean, our position is it is no different if the government had sent the company a letter with a copy of its registration and the word cancel stamped on it, effective date June 4th, 2011.
Their position has been a little more equivocal than that, hasn't it? And isn't that one of the key issues here? What is the final agency action that you point to?
The final agency action is this, and it comes in two stages. The first is the risk mitigation decision, which tells the company unequivocally, unambiguously, and in concrete and definite terms that the product cannot be sold after June 4th. Now, that's the first part.
That's the threat of the misbranding action, right?
Yes, and the statement that it's unlawful to sell the product thereafter. Right. Now, it comes in two stages because of this. In that document and in the following letter, the government said six times and five times, we will cancel.
Is that right? I thought they said we may cancel. We will cancel.
One time
cancel.
They said we may cancel. Exactly. Out of six,
Doesn't the may actually come later than the will, actually?
I think the record is just six times they said, once they said we may, and then five times they said they will. However, then in the...
So that gets us out from under, and I never know the correct pronunciation of the case. Is it Sebagaigi or...
Sebagaigi.
That makes this decidedly different than Sebagaigi, doesn't it?
No, in fact, it's on all fours because in Sebagaigi,
it was clear what was going to happen. It's not clear.
Right, because I'm not done with the facts. Okay. Sebagaigi, the actual document said nothing. It just said your product has to be changed. It's not good anymore. And then afterwards, the registrant naturally said, well, what do you mean by that? It says we're misbranded. Are you going to do anything to follow up? Are you going to cancel us? Which is what happened in this case. The registrant quite responsibly and legitimately followed the agency's directions and said, we are not going to comply because we disagree with the scientific basis. Now let us know how you're going to proceed. And the government, including up until days before the complaint, said, we are not going to commit to do anything. We're going to leave you and all your suppliers and all your retailers and all your distributors hanging out there and suffering from a misbranding threat. So you can be confronted with the dilemma, which was the dilemma facing the registrant in Sebagaigi, of either engaging in costly compliance.
Do you suggest then that any time the agency threatens a misbranding action, that a pre-enforcement challenge can be brought to that?
Absolutely not. Like the Supreme Court's decision in Abbott Labs and the Supreme Court's decision in Bennett Spears and this court's decision in Sebagaigi, if the government purports to say, you need to conform your primary conduct to my requirements, and we expect you to do this, or we will take enforcement action, and that alters the legal regime, then that is what the final agency action is triggered. I mean, it's a two-step process in terms of, is it final and fit for review, in terms of altering the legal rights. And I think it's important to put the record.
What are the legal rights that are altered here?
The legal rights are this.
Before June 2011, are there any legal rights altered?
The effective date of the ban and cancellation is definitely June 4, 2011, which hasn't occurred yet. But I know of no principle of law that says finality turns on the effective date of a regulation that changes, that tells you to change your primary conduct. That fact was immaterial in Sebagaigi, and the factors that were relevant and that are relevant under Supreme Court doctrine are, does the government expect a regulated industry to change its conduct?
Well, let me ask you, the agency doesn't interpret the statute in the manner you're doing, much less their RMD. They say, under the statute, they're at stage five, so that if they're going to proceed, you would have the opportunity, presumably, to say that, hypothetically, my product A while it contains one of the identified ingredients, it's minuscule. And this product shouldn't be banned. I mean, just take that hypothetical. The agency might agree, all right, and say that's not what we're focused on.
Right. Judge Rogers, I am frankly quite puzzled by that argument because it could not be more contrary to the facts of this case.
No. The statute says this in these various stages that at stage five, the agency is supposed to get all the data on the specific products and look at it and make some decisions.
And they've done that here.
They've looked at all your products?
Yes, that's what I'm about to get to, why I'm so puzzled by an argument that the United States would make that's so contrary to the facts. They said in a 60-page document, here is our final decision on the re-registration eligibility as to products. They could not have, they just kept saying products, products, products. And
where is that?
It's on the first page of the RMD and every other page. And most importantly, on pages 39, 63, and 96 of the record, the government said, this is your final re-registration eligibility decision under the statutory standard, which is the bottom line of Section 4 and the statutory.
Okay, right. It says final decision on the re-registration eligibility of products containing these ingredients. Now, why is the hypothetical I gave you not consistent with that document given the statutory scheme?
Because this, the only product the company makes contains an active ingredient that is now banned. The company can't go to the EPA.
A de minimis.
There's no such thing as a de minimis. The only thing that will kill the rat is the product that's banned. And let me put it this way, and which is so ironic and sort of just a common sense answer to the government's argument. Not only has the EPA said, you cannot use this product for consumer use, which is the only thing that Reckitt does. It didn't say, and by the way, come back to us and talk to us about your products. It said, get them off the market by June 4th. We're giving you some time to spend millions of dollars to develop a new product, to do some research, to market your product and manufacture it. But we don't want to see it on the market. And if you put it on the market, you or anyone else holding it will be subject to criminal, civil penalties, stop sale, removal, and seizure orders. And those stop sale orders occur without a hearing. And it would just, I just don't think you could read 60 pages where the government in over 90 different ways told companies to change its products in 54 different ways that it said, but maybe you want to come back to us and talk about it. It says it's unlawful to sell it. Well, I can talk about this more, but I was going to start with the jurisdictional question.
Good.
The court has before it both the company's direct appeal of the district court's a dismissal of the complaint for lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
All right. Your argument, I assume, is that given your interpretation, it's clear the district court had jurisdiction because we're in Section 6, not Section 4.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I think, and I can walk through it, what the jurisdiction.
Your petition for review is just a fail-safe, right? You really want to have this back in front of the district court.
Well, I mean, obviously, we'd be better off if you guys reserved it now on the merits. It would be much faster. But we actually think it was properly filed in district court. And because
both of your claims, right? But both claims.
If you're talking about both claims, let's break it down.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I mean by both claims, okay? Claim one is you're arguing that the agency's position that it can proceed with a misbranding action without first canceling. That's argument one, right?
Yes.
Okay, and argument two is a failure to act claim, right?
Well, yes, I see those as two sides. I was thinking of a whole other one, two sides of the same coin.
What's
because
the
failure to act is if the government had said, we want your product off the market by June 4th, but we will bring a cancellation proceeding, then we wouldn't be here.
You don't want that, right.
In other words, I think the relief that we're asking, that the district court was asked, was to declare the EPA's declaration that the product is unlawful as of June 4th illegal unless the government actually lawfully cancels the product.
Maybe let me just focus on what precipitated my question, okay? And it's in your reply brief, pages 7 to 8.
Okay.
You say, the district court concluded that this action should have been filed in this court because an alleged failure to initiate cancellation proceedings following Section 4 registration constitutes an allegation that EPA failed to take appropriate regulatory action, right? That analysis, you said, oversimplifies and misses the gravamen of the complaint.
That's right.
You claim that they affirmatively acted unlawfully by declaring its registered products misbranded, right? That's your claim.
You're absolutely correct.
And that's the claim. That's the only claim you're bringing, right?
Yes, and that we seek an injunction that the government can't bring that kind of misbranding action until they cancel.
And your argument is that there's final agency action under CBA-GIBE, right? And that belongs in the district court.
Right. And
that's your argument.
Yep, and that we're right on the
so
merits.
Then what am I missing? What's the nature of your
petition? I'm ready for you to write your opinion on that. If I could reserve the remaining.
No, well, not yet.
No, go ahead. I'm here for you.
Yeah. Exactly. So what's the petition for review?
Oh, I think Judge Griffith stated it's a fail-safe because if the court were to agree.
So if we agree that that this belongs in the district court under CBA-GIBE, that's it. There's nothing left for the petition for review. Right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, the petition for review is completely in the alternative.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. That's good.
If I could reserve the remainder.
Okay, of course.
Thank you.
All right, counsel, happily responded.
May it please the court, Sam Sankar for the United States EPA. EPA has known for a long time that rodenticides can pose special risks to children and the environment, and it's been working for over 10 years to address those risks. Most recently, it issued the 2008 risk mitigation decision that's the subject of this case. Now, Reckitt understandably and correctly reads the RMD as a signal that EPA intends eventually to prohibit Reckitt from selling many of its decon products, at least as they're currently formulated. But EPA hasn't done anything
yet. Doesn't it say that as of June 2011, these products, if they're still on the market, will be misbranded?
It says they will be considered misbranded, and that's a statement of two things. First, it's a statement of EPA's understanding that under the current law, as it stands now, Reckitt's products are misbranded today.
Yeah.
And then it's a statement that
In June, they'll be considered misbranded. Now, the only thing the only thing I can see in this document that suggests any uncertainty is exactly how EPA will proceed. But there's no doubt that as of that date, they're considered misbranded under the statute.
I want to clarify that. By saying that they would be considered misbranded on that date, what EPA is saying is that they are misbranded now. They're misbranded now.
And that makes their case even stronger.
It makes their case even stronger for that we've said that they would be considered, but that's not final action, Your Honor.
What isn't final action? Well, let me ask you this. Let's get to the question.
Here's why.
Let's assume I ask the question backwards. If we think there is final agency action, you agree it belongs in the district court under 16A, right?
Yes, but it depends on which final action you're talking about, because their claim, at least as I read their opening brief and their petition for review, they seem to be making two claims. And it seems now
They're making a Section 6 claim.
If they're making a Section 6 claim and they're claiming that we unlawfully failed to cancel, then I think that's an odd claim because they haven't asked us to cancel
the
product.
As I understand their claim, it is that the agency has no authority to proceed with a misbranding action without first canceling under Section 6.
That's right.
You agree with that? Okay.
I understand that's their claim, yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, if we think that, set aside the fact that you don't agree that it's final, if it is final, do you agree that belongs in the district court under 16A?
The failure to cancel, it's a little complicated because the failure to cancel a product is a decision that goes under 16A, but I would say that this is not a failure to cancel. It's a failure to undertake cancellation proceedings. Reckitt can have its products canceled.
It's a final agency action under 16A.
Then 16B also says that final agency actions that are taken after a hearing.
There isn't a hearing here. So we're talking 16A land.
There is a complication here. In a case called EDF versus COSL and another case called Humane Society, this court has explained that after a hearing, it means something much more than an adjudicatory hearing. It also means notice and comment. And that's the only reason I'm hedging on this. The Ninth Circuit decided a case that I briefed recently on this issue.
Then,
that's why it's a little complicated.
Okay, then I understand how you can argue this final agency action And I read your brief carefully, but where you need to help me is how do you get around Ciba-Geigy?
Here's the first
explain that.
Explanation. Ciba-Geigy was a case about ripeness, and here's why you can tell.
But ripeness, that's not going to get you anywhere.
Here's the simplest answer.
Because the finality component of ripeness is exactly the same as the final agency action.
If that's so, then Ciba-Geigy...
And this court has said that many times.
Your Honor, that's correct, okay. But under the formulations of this of ripeness and finality that this court has used since Bennett versus Speer, those formulations are quite different than the one that the court used in Ciba-Geigy. And here's exactly
tell me why. Go ahead.
So in Ciba-Geigy, the court focused on the practical effect on the litigant in order to determine that something was final. And if you read cases like this court's decision in Independent Equipment Distributors, it says, and I'm quoting here, practical consequences, such as the threat of having to defend yourself in an administrative hearing, should the agency actually decide to pursue enforcement, are insufficient.
No, but that's not their argument. They're not arguing that they have to... They're arguing much more than that. They're arguing that they have to abandon this product. This is a product they've invested in, and that they have to change their business by June 11th or face a misbranding action.
And that is a threat.
Have to defend it, but that they have to abandon the product.
Your Honor, they don't have to abandon the product until they defend themselves. And that's the important difference. In Bennett versus Speer, if you look at the language there, they say you need to change a legal right or obligation. No legal right or obligation was changed under the RMB. And let me explain why. EPA could have brought a misbranding action against Reckitt without having issued the RMB.
You're telling me that this language from Ciba-Geigy is no longer good law. When they say it would pose a hardship, the company's only alternative to costly compliance would be to run the risk of serious civil and criminal penalties for unlawful distribution of misbranded products. That's no longer good law?
That is a risk that they ran before we issued the RMD. What's important is that risk hasn't changed as a result of the RMD or as a result of EPA's statements that it would consider
those. But before the RMD, the agency hadn't told them their product was misbranded.
And the agency's statements in the RMD would be entitled to no deference from any court, and that's why the legal obligations have changed. I urge you to take a look at AT&T versus EEOC, Independent Equipment Distributors, and the Reliable Automatic Sprinklers case. All of those cases were situations in which an agency said to a regulated entity, we think your products are out of compliance. And in each case, the court said, these are not final actions because until the agency wins in court, it can't be. And here's another example of why.
Is your argument that there's no final agency action completely dependent on this hardship issue?
Not at all.
Okay. Tell me why it isn't. Here's what I understand the agency to have said, and you tell me why this isn't final. Under Ciba-Geigy, okay? I understand what the agency said here is that, number one, this product is dangerous. Number two, if it isn't removed from the market by June 2011, it runs the risk of a misbranding action. And number three, the agency disagrees with the company that before it files a misbranding action, it needs to cancel under Section 6. That's what I understand this.
The third statement I don't think appears anywhere in the risk mitigation decision. That is a factual.
It appears directly in the letter to the agency.
We say we would consider.
No, it says in the, I don't have the language here. It says, as I paraphrase, it says, we disagree with you that we can only act pursuant, that we have to cancel under Section 6 before we file a misbranding action. Um, You don't think that my summary of what the agency has done is accurate?
I could be wrong, Your Honor. I'm going to look at agency counsel on this just because it seems important to you, and I want to be absolutely right about this. I don't believe we made that statement in the record. We did make that statement in the Siba Geigy case.
Right.
And I think
I thought that was your point, that you haven't made that statement here. That's one of the points. Yes.
That's one of the points. But again, Your Honor, so if that's important to you, Judge Tatel, we can double check that. But that's my understanding. But more important.
I'm looking at the letter that starts at JA 96. I think that's what Judge Tatel may be referring to.
I'm just looking at my notes here. Let me see. Hold on.
And I didn't see it in that letter. Now, maybe there's another letter. Somewhere.
Yeah, I'm not aware of it.
All right, but you agree with his first two points as to how, I don't want to misrepresent, but I thought what Judge Tatel was saying is he understands what the agency has done here. It said, number one, the product is dangerous. Number two, if it's not removed from the market by June 4, 2011, it will be considered misbranded.
But I think it's important to unpack what that means to say it will be considered misbranded. Again, I want to repeat, the agency is not changing Reckitt's obligations under the misbranding provisions. It's not purporting to interpret the misbranding provisions. It's not purporting to tell Reckitt to extend or increase Reckitt's obligations under those. And in that respect, it's exactly like the cases that I've cited where the agency is providing legal advice functionally to a regulated entity and saying, here's a heads up, which we did not have to give you.
Okay, but I was getting at that with counsel when she said, well, if you look at the RMD, you know, there's 60 pages of analysis of all of its products. You know, there's nothing more to be done under the statutory scheme, stage five, all right? So that the RMD in this case is tantamount to a cancellation proceeding.
Well, Your Honor, we can't cancel their products without actually canceling their products. The cancellation is not, they seem to think that a registration, first of all, is a license to sell your product without fear of any sort of extrinsic liability. In fact, FIFRA says that registration is not a defense to any offense under FIFRA. So step one is I'm not sure why they think that we need to cancel their product before we bring a claim for an offense.
I thought the agency's argument, the stronger one, was that, all right, we've said all this, and we said as of June 4, or after June 4, your product, if it's still on the market, will be deemed misbranded. You have to live with that and take the risk that, well, maybe someday the agency will decide to take some action on this. In the meantime, if you go out of business because you can't sell your product, that's neither here nor there.
That's exactly right.
And you just have no remedy in court.
That's exactly right. The simplest way to put this is that the risk mitigation decision is non-functional because EPA didn't have to issue it before either bringing a cancellation proceeding or bringing a misbranding action. There's nothing in here that EPA could rely on in bringing a cancellation proceeding or in a misbranding action.
Is it your view that they could have challenged the RMD itself?
Well, they don't challenge the RMD, and it's my view that they could not because it's not final action either. And the reason why it's not final action, the very first page of it says that it's a re-registration eligibility determination. If you look at the structure of FIFRA Section 4, it clearly shows that there are later steps. Reckitt itself concedes that EPA hasn't taken those steps. And crucially, even at the end of the Section 4 process, it's EPA's obligation to take, quote, appropriate regulatory action. Reckitt itself, at page 32 of its brief, concedes that it would be within EPA's discretion to do nothing.
But back to the Bennett versus Speer issue about legal consequences. Haven't a legal consequence been visited upon a Reckitt-Unkaiser now because you were saying they are not entitled to have a cancellation hearing before the misbranding takes place? Isn't that a change in your position?
Well, first of all, under even Reckitt's theory, it's not a change since Siba Geigy. We had that position back in Siba Geigy. And let's make it more concrete. If it were a regulation that we had promulgated at the time of Siba Geigy, a regulation that said that we don't have to give you a cancellation hearing, it's clear that the time for challenging that on its face, which is functionally what they're doing, would have long ago passed. They could maybe bring it an as-applied challenge, but not a facial challenge. And they're not actually challenging the statement. And even if they struck it from the risk mitigation decision, their legal obligation, or what they think is their legal obligation to change their products, would remain because of the cancellation threat. So, again, I want to be very clear. There is no change to their legal obligation under the risk mitigation
So when
decision.
You started out first, when you started to speak today, you said the agency's working over 10 years. The statement about as of June 2011, we will consider these products to be misbranded, is saying two things. One, it's misbranded today. And two,
we are giving you a grace period at the time we issued it, a three-year grace period, because we recognize that if we were to come right at you right now, it would be disruptive to your business. And we're giving you 3 years to develop alternative products. In fact, we're doing more than that. We're spelling out exactly what would work, not the only way that would work, but one way that would work. And as
so
a result...
why doesn't that just support their argument that the agency has taken final action because it's telling them, change your products?
They're not challenging any of the... Well, first of all, we're presenting one opportunity for one pathway to bringing their products into compliance with the Act. But until we bring an enforcement action premised on that theory or cancel their registrations, one of those two things, there's no final action.
But isn't the agency's theory, I'll just go back to this, they responded to the RMD by asking the agency to cancel, right?
Yes.
And the agency said no.
No, the agency said we haven't decided whether or not we're going to. And in fact, throughout the RMD, there are statements from the agency saying that it intends, that it will take cancellation actions.
Pardon me?
Throughout the risk mitigation decision, there are statements from EPA saying that it will initiate cancellation actions, which is exactly what Reckitt seems to want. And EPA is simply saying we don't want to prioritize that until we see how the industry responds and we see whether there's any need for those cancellation actions, whether people voluntarily comply with the suggestions that we made in the risk mitigation.
Well, you know at least as to one. They say they're not going to comply. And your point is let's wait and see what happens as of June 2011.
Our point is that it's within EPA's discretion to say we have other fish to fry right now. And we are, having said this to the industry, we certainly are not going to prioritize this before June 2011. We have thousands, literally, of other pesticides to work on.
So their argument is, given the statutory scheme, by putting out the RMD, you've coerced all of these companies into changing their products. They have no way to challenge this.
And I've cited several cases in which this court, including members of this panel, have been on cases saying practical coercion is not final action. It is common practice, frankly, for agencies to write regulated entities and say, listen, we'd really like you to change these things voluntarily, and if you don't, we have this hammer, and we might swing it at you. But unless you change the nature of the hammer, unless you change the regulatory structure that they're operating under for the misbranding provisions, which they haven't, there's no final action. A way to see this clearly is to recognize that if EPA had brought the misbranding action instead of issuing the RMD, if it had simply filed an administrative complaint, this case would be FTC versus Standard Oil. If Reckitt immediately ran in here and said, I want an injunction against the administrative proceeding for cancellation, you would say, absolutely not. Until the agency cancellation or the agency misbranding action is finished, there is no final action. Here we have a situation in which they're doing it years before the action is even brought, and it makes it very clear.
Why couldn't the agency entity come in at that point and say, but the statute requires you to proceed by a cancellation proceeding?
They would have the opportunity to say that before the administrative agency,
right,
before the ALJ, and then when the ALJ ruled, There's court review of that, and you could review the ALJ's determination. The ALJ might reject that, might reject our view, and might very well accept Reckitt's view, in which case you wouldn't need review. It would be the view of the agency, and it would be done. Mm-hmm. But until that action is completed, there's nothing final. I want to speak briefly to the merits of the statutory argument. I realize I'm out of time, but with the court's indulgence.
So before you get into that, say once again for me so I totally understand the government's position. Your basic argument for why this case is not a Ciba-Geigy case?
First of all, because Ciba-Geigy was a ripeness test, and I and okay. let me...
Siba-Gagne
was a ripeness case and okay. didn't apply the Bennett versus Speer test for finality, which okay. requires a change in the legal obligations. Uh-huh. The only legal obligation that Reckitt seems to be concerned about is the part that where EPA said you would be considered misbranded. And what I'm telling you is that without bringing a misbranding action and succeeding in it, EPA cannot impose a misbranding obligation on Reckitt. Okay, misbranding is not something.
Is there another distinction, or is that it?
That's the most important one. Uh-huh. The other distinctions are one of the ones that you I think the record I think will support me on this. EPA has not said in this case.
No, you're right. I was quoting from the wrong letter. So go ahead.
All right.
So in other words, the second reason is that EPA has not finally decided. This is your position, right?
On whether or not it's going to take a misbranding action.
Yeah.
Or not. Yeah. Absolutely, because and in fact the record shows the letters show repeated threats. If you look, I'm going to give you the page citations here. There's a little chart that Reckitt was supposed to uh-huh. fill out, and it says the registrant had to make a representation. I don't intend to voluntarily bring this product into compliance. I understand that EPA may pursue additional regulatory action, quote, including cancellation. So repeatedly, we are nowhere near the point where the...
You say that EPA hasn't finally decided whether to bring a misbranding action? I didn't hear
that. That's correct. EPA cannot, for purposes of this court's review, make a final determination until it actually right. files one. And then when it does, this becomes FTC versus Standard Oil. The agency is taking an internal action until the agency completes its decision. There's nothing final to review.
Okay.
I do want to speak. I want to talk briefly about the statute. This is, I think in some cases you may worry that the government is arguing about finality because we're worried about the merits. In this case, I think our merits argument is extremely strong. Reckitt's position appears to be that when Congress added the cancellation provisions to FIFRA, it meant to write out several of the misbranding provisions. In fact, their only argument for that is a single line from the legislative history, as far as I can tell. Our argument is very simple. The statute speaks for itself. The misbranding provisions exist, and Reckitt would have to give them some content, which it hasn't done, in order to explain why they're even there in the code. Another point, back when Congress added the cancellation provisions, it did make technical changes to the offense provisions. It went through and said, well, this offense thing makes no more sense. There was a provision called Section 135 FB, and that provision said, well, you have enhanced fines if we register you under protest and you still sell it. They said, no, we don't need that anymore. But they left all the other misbranding provisions in. And in addition, as I mentioned earlier, FIFRA says in plain language that registration is not a defense to any offense. I don't know what more we can do to say that the statute, that the misbranding provisions stand independently from the registration and cancellation provisions. We ask that you affirm the district court.
Can I back up? To the earlier line of question. On the final determination, so you said that EPA hasn't finally decided whether to take action on the misbranding, but hasn't EPA finally decided that they're not entitled to cancellation?
That is certainly.
That's the position of the EPA,
that's the
right? Why doesn't that have legal consequence?
It does have legal consequence, but this court, reliable automatic sprinklers.
Excuse me. When I asked the same question, you said no.
I'm sorry. What I meant to say is that EPA has decided whether or not to initiate a cancellation.
But you just answered Judge Griffith's question with a no.
Let me restate. I want to be absolutely clear. I'm not trying to. I might have misheard your question. What I was trying to say was EPA has not decided whether or not it will take a misbranding action against
question.
Reckitt.
That's not the question we're asking you.
Okay.
The question we're asking you is whether EPA has decided that it may proceed with a misbranding action without first filing a cancellation proceeding.
It is EPA's view, yes. That
it has. Well, you answered that question the other way when
I misunderstood the question earlier, and I apologize.
Okay, well, then why isn't that final agency action?
Because there are many things that agencies do that don't have legal impacts on Reckitt. That procedural entitlement, if EPA were to write a regulation saying this is how we interpret this.
But if they've made that decision, then the case is like Siba-Gagne, because that's exactly the position that the agency took in the letter that I misquoted. So I don't see the distinction. There and here, the agency has taken the position that they can proceed with a misbranding action without first filing a cancellation proceeding. Now, they may do it or may not do it, but You just agreed. They've taken that position.
Let me.
Is that right?
Yes.
No, then I don't see how you distinguish it from Siba Geigy.
Excuse me.
I just don't see the distinction.
I think we need to be very clear about what the record is here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right? And I agree in Siba Geigy. It was very clear that the agency had already taken a legal position. All right? In the letter and the RMD that are before us today, I don't see where the agency has taken that legal position and said, this is the way we interpret the statute. Now, all of your discussion just before Judge Griffith's question about statutory interpretation suggests that you have taken that position. So I need to be very clear where we are in this case.
So the agency has taken, it is EPA's view, and I can stand here and tell you as the United States government that it is EPA's view that we do not need to bring a cancellation proceeding before taking a misbranding action. If there's any doubt about that, I want to clarify that.
Okay. Right.
However, if you look at reliable automatic sprinkler, there's a case where the Consumer Product Safety Commission said, we believe we have the authority to take this action. And the court said, they believe they have the authority to take the action. Until a court agrees with them, there's no final action here because it's not their decision.
Didn't we distinguish Siba Geigy in that case?
You did. In part, you said that there wouldn't be a hearing.
And we said
there will be a hearing in this case.
Okay.
There will be a hearing in this case. And frankly, Your Honor, if you look at reliable automatic sprinkler, in distinguishing Siba Geigy, it applies the Bennett versus Speer test, where there has to be a legal consequence on this person, on the regulated entity. There's case after case in this circuit saying that the burden of having to deal with the burden of fearing a enforcement proceeding that you don't think is legitimate is not the sort of final action or not the sort of thing that makes a case final. That practical impact is not enough.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. If I can start with just the Siba Geigy point on the record. Judge Tatel, you are
counsel.
Sure.
Or petitioner.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
If I could start with the point about the record between Siba Geigy. In Siba Geigy, what you had quoted is the letter where the government wrote back and said, we don't agree with your position. What happened here is the equivalent. It was just done over a lengthier period of time. They said, your product is misbranded, get it off the market, and so forth.
Well, what about the letter?
Can we just finish this? I'd like her to finish the question, the answer.
All right, please.
She was about to tell us where in the record this is. So go ahead.
Then the company said, you told us to tell you whether we were going to voluntarily cancel and we're not. Then we thereafter begged them, got down on our hands and knees and said, please cancel. Will you give us a date? Will you let us know? And the agency said, we're not telling you anything. There was radio silence. In oral conversations, which is in the briefs, the EPA just said, we're not committing to anything. We're just going to leave you and your suppliers hanging out there. No, they never wrote something saying it is our legal position. We can do whatever we want. They just said, we're not going to tell you. So good luck.
All right.
Then in their brief, they made clear, and in standing here in court, they have made clear that they do, in fact, have the legal authority. So, in effect, their brief serves the same function as the letter. But even had they not submitted the letter, Judge Rogers, my position would be the government just can't do that. They can't say, we're just going to say nothing and good luck on June 4th. Now, did you want to ask a question?
May I ask a question?
Yes.
All right. On Joint Appendix 100, this is the letter from the agency to your client.
Yes.
It says, EPA will review the 90-day responses and will initiate cancellation actions against products for which it does not receive notification of the registrant's intent to comply with the risk mitigation measures.
Absolutely, and that's why the company was begging for the cancellation, because that's what the government told the company it was going to do, but then didn't.
Well, but my point is, it hasn't ruled out that in your case or your client's case, after it reviews the 90-day, it says it will initiate cancellation action.
Right. Well, that was a year.
So my point is, until we know what the agency is going to do, either proceed by cancellation or proceed by an enforcement action on misbranding, I thought that was counsel's argument, that there is no final agency.
Right, and that is no different than what confronted this court in Ciba-Geigy.
Ciba-Geigy, it was after the deadline. The agency said, here is our position, hard and fast, as to your client. That's not this situation based on the letter that the agency gave your client, is it?
Your Honor, no, of course not, because the facts are the effective date hasn't occurred yet.
Yes, but and you have this letter saying they will proceed, initiate cancellation actions. I thought your concern was they haven't done anything. They've left your client hanging in this period where the deadline is approaching and your client, from its own business interests, has to, as Judge Tatel was pursuing earlier, change its product.
And Judge Rogers, we would be thrilled if there would be a judicial order saying EPA, at some point you have to issue, you have to do what you said and issue cancellation before you can revoke their registration by declaring it banned and canceled.
That's the merits, right?
That's the merits point. But in terms of finality,
we still have to get over the jurisdictional question here,
okay,
right?
In terms of finality, if Ciba-Geigy had said your product's misbranded today, it's our position we don't have to bring it, and we will initiate cancellation, but we're never going to tell you when. And you're caught, you're forced with the dilemma between hoping the agency is going to do what it says and who knows when. But in the meantime, and this goes with the practicality, it's not just the company that is facing severe criminal penalties. As a practical matter, delaying review is going to shut this down because no supplier, retailer, or distributor is going to take it upon themselves, it's not their product, to be hit with criminal penalties for misbranding, stop sale removal orders, and in-rem proceedings.
So, but your client says it's already spent money shifting products.
Right, but it doesn't.
So, I mean, it's not a shutdown, at least on the record we have.
It will no.
It's already spent, what, $1 million.
It will no longer be
carrying new products. So
right,
it's not the company is going to be shut down. I mean,
that line of products.
What we have.
The line of products right. That the company believes is the most actually safe and effective, and the most effective at killing disease-carrying rodents is the ingredient that was banned. And the point I also wanted to make on Ciba-Geigy about the world change. I mean, it's somewhat of a strange world that the government would issue a document that said, you have to, you must, you're required, you must, 90 times. And nowhere stamped on that document did they say, but this has no legal effect. Please feel free to ignore it. This is not binding, and this is only a signal, which is what they're saying today. And that just is not what the document said.
When I asked the government counsel at the end of his argument for his reasons for distinguishing Ciba-Geigy, the first reason he gave was that that was a ripeness case and that final agency action analysis is now different. What do you think about that?
Well, I didn't understand his argument. Even if we didn't have Ciba-Geigy, Abbott Labs and Bennett Spear, Alaska, Genentech, I mean, we have two recent Supreme Court cases saying you don't put private industry in this position with the government. The government can't do this. They're allowed to bring pre-enforcement challenges. You don't have to wait for them to be subject to civil and criminal sanctions. So Ciba-Geigy's in 84, and the Supreme Court doctrine has only gotten more favorable for us, and it was a straightforward application of Abbott Labs. So finality turns on the Abbott Labs. And yes, Ciba-Geigy was a ripeness case, but it applied the actual Supreme Court case, which, you know, I think it's to me it's all the same. If it's the finality turns on those two criteria, the fitness for review, are you going to interfere with agency process? Here we have a pure legal question mm-hmm. about whether there can be authority to just revoke a registration. If I could just briefly turn to the merits because the government did. I mean, one question that was not asked, but it should be looming in the court's mind, is if this is so easy, why has it never happened? We know of no instance ever where the government has said, we just registered you because we found that it poses no unreasonable effects on the environment, but we also think it's misbranded because it imposes unreasonable effects on the environment, and we don't think it should be registered anymore. Their view would allow you to register a product which says here's an approved label and you sell it in accordance with the terms and conditions, but tomorrow we've changed our mind. We feel different today and we think it's misbranded. So my first point is, by definition under the statute, a registration on its face remains valid until it's canceled. The second point is the government's position would wipe out an entire provision of the U.S. Code and render Section 6 completely meaningless. Congress guaranteed registrants, before they could have their product completely banned from the market, that they be given a hearing where the views of HHS and the Department of Agriculture would be considered, and the views of an impartial scientific panel, which didn't occur in this case, as well as an adjudicatory hearing where there's cross-examination of witnesses, where other registrants could participate, as well as the consuming public, who presumably are going to want more affordable products than what the EPA has mandated. And the third thing goes to the government's point about, well, we've always had misbranding power, and now we just have a cancellation provision. Sure, the government can always bring a misbranding action on the basis that your product says it's a rodenticide, but it's got baby powder or some other kind of product that's adulterated and misbranded. You can always sell a product misbranded that's not the approved label. I mean, there's plenty of ways that Reckitt has always been, and any company has been, subject to misbranded. But to say that we can just throw your product off the market because we'll bring a misbranding action saying it's not safe, even though that's what the whole point of the cancellation provision was, would just put us back pre-1964, when that is what the government did. You registered a product under protest, and then you got it off the market by bringing a misbranding threat. And we'd be back before 1964 with none of the procedural guarantees provided
All
to
right.
registrants.
Any more questions?
Thank
All right,
you.
We will take the case under advisement. Thank you, counsel.